Tell you what, having a pretty good time on a Monday. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. I am live in Southern California, and by now you know this program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Having a good time because we're getting ready for the upcoming NFL Draft and the upcoming NFL Combine. We talked about Robert Kraft. We got into Bryce Harper and whether or not he's actually in the mix for the LA Dodgers and the Dodgers in the mix for him. Philadelphia's been talking now for several weeks that they're this close. They've almost got this deal done. And then we're wide open. And then organically, the topic emerged about if, in fact, this is the smack-off and the season's underway. And we're losing one of our best. And again, I haven't confirmed that. Jeff Paston's not said to me, I can't do this. I've got a sense that he might not be able to do it. And if he can't do it, I'm wondering what media member would step up and take his place. This guy's got one. Hey, Jim, regarding the smack off, I can give you a few minutes, but then I got to bounce. Laugh out loud. Yours, C. Hansen.
Laugh out loud. I can't control my horny level.
Yeah, it's not a good fit, I don't think. I don't think Hansen would be good for it. We have no connection to Hansen. Well, other than that connection to Hansen.
Actually, I find it quite attractive.
Oh, yeah, I just came by to check on her. Really? Then what's all the wine and duct tape about? Why do you have box cutters and red wine and duct tape? I don't know, Hansen. How'd you end up in jail? Yeah, but what about all the rubbers? Where do they come from and why are there so many?
I want to meet you and fool around. Are you up to meeting tonight, hon?
I don't know. Why don't you pay your rent? Why don't you pay your taxes?
Laugh out loud.
No, that's not a good fit. That won't work. Hey, Rome, if you're recruiting media members for SmackUp 25, get that dude on NFL Network with the huge melon.
Van Smack, basically, just like Hollywood, it's an honor to be here.
Vadi in Pasadena. They're talking about Kyle Brandt.
I had a ball.
Romy, we need Romo in the smack off more than ever to kick out the whores.
Kicked out the whores.
Andy in Portland. Romo could. Romo could. We had Romo on Radio Row, obviously, leading up to the Super Bowl. And he talked about the lick that he put on Chris Chandler in the Super Bowl back in the day.
Blitz on, I was able to get a sack on him. And I tell you what, I hit him so effing hard, I don't know how he got up. And when I mean I hit him hard, to his core, I felt like I could have broke his spine. I hit him so hard. The fact that he got up.
What did you think when he got up?
I was like, this guy's going to be a pile of crap the rest of the day. That's what I said to myself. Because you just don't know what I brought in that hit. I swear to you. You know, we had a big rivalry when I was in Denver, and it was against the Oakland Raiders. If you knew how many times I hit Rich Gannon like that, I hit him a couple times. And I remember when I got to Oakland, and he pulled me aside, and he said, Romo, you have no idea how much I hated playing against you. You hit me a couple times where I didn't know if I could get up. And somehow, some way, my teammates got me up. But when you get that good hit on somebody, you know, because it feels so good. It's like you hear at the bottom of the pile, oh! Yeah, I don't care who it is. You can just hear it.
All right, so the most amazing thing about Bill Romanowski telling those stories and the hit that he put on Chandler and the hits that he put on Rich Gannon, the most amazing thing to me is not what happened to those guys, but how Romo and I came together. I can remember when I interviewed Romo back in the day when he was in the midst of all this, and I asked him during a TV interview once, it was a satellite shot, we were not in studio, and I said, hey, Romo, are you a dirty player? Are you a dirty player? And Romo, looked at me like he was going to find a way to come through the camera through the satellite and do to me what he did to those quarterbacks. Luckily, we were separated by about 2,000 miles. But then one day we weren't. One day several years ago on the row, there was Romo. And my producer said, hey, man, Bill Romanowski is looking at you and has been. I'm like, what? I'm not aware of that. I know what he's looking at. I said, we got to have a little conversation, me and Romo, because he was literally, Romo was looking at me. And at this point, we had no connection, no personal connection. Romo was looking at me. Alvin, re-rack that for just the first part of it. Romo was glaring at me, man, staring me down, trying to intimidate me, and staring at me as if I were Chris Chandler before he blew him up in the Super Bowl.
We had a fire blitz on. I was able to get a sack on him. And I tell you what, I hit him so effing hard, I don't know how he got up. And when I mean I hit him hard, to his core, I felt like I could have broke his spine. I hit him so hard.
All right, so Romo on the fire blitz thought that he broke this guy's spine. And understand that when I saw Romo, when he and I did come together maybe 10 years ago on Radio Row, hell, never mind 10 years ago. If you see Romo today, he looks like he can still play. And he's looking at me like he's coming off a fire blitz and he wants to break my spine. So I take a deep breath and I say to my producer, go get him. Bring him over here. Let's find out what this is all about. I'm like, hey, Romo. I'm looking like, he's like, hey, Jimmy. I said, Romo, are you coming off a fire blitz right now and are you looking to break my spine? Or are you and I good? Like, why are you looking at me like that? He's like, oh, no, I'm a big fan. I'm like, you are? That's incredible news, Romo. Why don't you sit down and let's have a conversation? I thought that's the noise I was going to make. I thought Romo, I'm like, would Romo really do that on radio, row in front of all these people? He might. He might. So I had visions of, oh, Romo, you broke my freaking spine, dude. And Romo and I have been very good friends ever since. I love Romo. So to answer the question, could Romo do the smack off? Romo can do whatever the hell he wants. This guy's got one. Hey, Romy, let's get Dana White to replace Jeff. He can hit people with blasts like Rick De La Weirdo or Tyler De La Cokehead.
Oscar De La Dummy, Cokehead Nutball.
If Dana's feeling it, if Dana gets to a place where it's that personal, he could do it. Oh, Dana for sure could do it.
Oscar De La Dummy.
But he could do it if Oscar De La Hoya were in the field. But
Cokehead Nutball.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't really see Dan. First of all, Dana doesn't know the callers. Dana's not going to go, hey, Tyler, you Cokehead Nutball. Hey, Cokehead Matt De La Weirdo. No, Dana's not going to do it. Good news is we have a lot of time between now and summer. We have not decided yet. Pretty good reaction today, clones. Y'all holding your own. 1-800-636-8686. I've got Michael Badgley in studio. He's coming up next. The Chargers finally solved their issue at kicker. That story's coming up. He will be in studio next segment. Right, so really quickly, you know the NBA season is taking a pretty dramatic turn. If I'm talking about a beef between Ja Rule and the Minnesota T-Wolves. Not just a Twitter spat, but one that includes a curse. And I don't mean like profanity. I don't mean like a curse word. I mean an actual curse. Like somebody dropped a hex on somebody. Yeah, I'm talking about Ja Rule putting a curse on the T-Wolves. And if I'm being honest, I never thought that I'd ever be talking about that. But here we are. Here the bleep we are. Now, as you know, Ja Rule has been getting a lot of ink recently, given that there has been not one, but two different docs on the sham that was the Fyre Festival and his role in that. And it was all that heat that inspired him to jump on Twitter last month with this classic tweet, quote, I too was hustled, scammed, bamboozled, hoodwinked, led astray. Hey, listen, you know how this goes. If you don't like what people are saying about you, man, run a misdirection. Change the story. Change the narrative. Get them to talk about something else. So that's what he attempted to do by showing up at Saturday's T-Wolves Bucks game in Milwaukee to perform at halftime. Now, the Bucks were paying tribute to the 90s, and they did so by inviting a guy who was actually better known for his work in the 2000s. At least that's what he pointed out. But he soldiered on. He threw on a Ray Allen throwback jersey, and he got the crowd fired up. Go ahead and roll this.
They said this is 90s night. So they brought out a 2000 artist. But my album came out in 99, so I guess that counts. Sanchez, we ready? 1 second. I'm rolling up. Are we ready? I guess not. All right. Turn me up. Turn me up. Milwaukee!
In a word, awkward?
Awkward.
It's an amazing clip. Like, I'm not going to get into the semantics of having a guy whose album came out in 1999 on a 90s night and saying that he's more of a 2000s guy. Nor am I going to get on Ja Rule for trying to make him sound like a more recent artist who shouldn't have even been messing around with the 90s night. Let's focus on what matters. My man's laugh. Dude, that's an amazing laugh. Alvin, go ahead and add that to your list of all-time great laughs. Can I get that list really quickly? Alvin, you know what was funny? You know what I thought was funny? The look you just shot me when I said, can I get that list? Dude, was that so hard, Alvin? Even more amazing is that he chases that with Sanchez, are we ready? And it's not totally clear what Sanchez says or who Sanchez is, but it sure as hell did not sound like the Sanchez there was ready. Because the next thing we hear is, are we ready?
Are we ready?
Followed by dead silence. And then, I guess not.
I guess not.
That, excuse me, my bad. MMA announcer cannot believe the record scratch on that. Nothing like screaming, are we ready? For like a full minute. And then getting nothing. I actually feel for this cat. That'd be like, hey, Alvin, are we ready?
Are we ready?
And Alvin giving me that terrified look. Hey, listen, I'm not going to crush a guy for the stone silence that greeted the, are we ready?
Are we ready?
For all we know, the crowd was going crazy and somebody did not turn the mic up. Or not. Either way, Ja Rule, being the pro that he is, worked through it. And then just kept grinding, kept working. Because according to reports, his performance went so long and was so bad, the Greek Freak was out on the court getting shots up, warming up for the third quarter while Ja Rule was still out there performing. I mean, for a guy who had a hit that was always on time, it sure seems like that was not the case. In other words, pretty much nothing went right, which led the T-Wolves to tweet a photo of Ja Rule's performance with the caption, quote, we too were hustled, scammed, bamboozled, hoodwinked, and led astray. I mean, bam, that is so badass. And that was not the only criticism that Rule was taking on Twitter. And you know what he's going to do in a situation like that? The thing that he should not do, jump on Twitter. There was this rather profane tweet directed at all the haters. Quote, y'all really be on my bleep. Let's be clear. My sound was bleeped up at first and didn't come on when it was supposed to, but I rocked that bleep. Thanks for the love, Milwaukee. Great win. My streak continues. LOL.
Laugh out loud.
Then there was this one in response to Bleacher Report's tweet with video of Giannis warming up during the show. He said, quote, y'all act like this is not normal at halftime shows. Y'all mad corny for this post. And then there was this heat for the T-Wolves for having the audacity to mock him. Quote, you just jinx yourself talking to the God this way. You curse now. You won't win a championship for the next 30 years. And Kat is leaving. Apologize and I'll lift the curse. Kiss of death. Damn rule. Don't hurt the T-Wolves that way. Let me break this down really quickly, line by line. I love that his immediate reaction to a team talking junk to him is to bash them for, quote, talking to the God this way, end quote. And then chasing that with, your curse now. And then here comes the curse. You won't win a championship for the next 30 years, and Kat's leaving. All right, first off, the T-Wolves haven't won a championship in their first 30 years. Saying that they won't win one in their next 30 isn't exactly a curse. Man, it's a freaking prediction, and a really good prediction. It's like a lock. And as for Kat leaving, my man agreed to a 5-year extension back in September. So it doesn't mean that he's not eventually going to leave, but it's not like he's going to bolt tomorrow because Ja Rule was ticked off about the team's official Twitter account getting on him about the halftime show. Oh, and as for that apologize and I'll lift the curse part, yeah, I'm still waiting for the T-Wolves to apologize because they just kept right on tweeting about the game and then they posted photoshops of fake movie posters in honor of the Oscars. Ja Rule, I know that did not go the way that you would have liked and you took some heat for it. Man, but don't jump on Twitter and start banging out weird curses. Do what the greats do. Man, just roll with it and laugh it off. Just laugh it off. Tom Thibodeau would have laughed that off for sure. When we come back, we're talking Chargers football kicker Michael Badgley joins me in studio. That's coming up next. Don't go anywhere. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Like I said, really nice Monday. And Charger football is our topic next. Another in-studio guest. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. See how this goes. For the better part of 21 years, there was no professional football in this town. And now we are officially a big-time football town. We've got a couple of really good teams. One goes to the Super Bowl, and there's another one down the road that had a really nice year. We are joined right now in studio by a kicker for the LA Chargers. Let me lay out some numbers for you. He set a team record for single-season field goal percentage with at least 15 made field goals, set franchise postseason records in the wildcard win over the Ravens for single-game points with 15, field goals with 5. He was an all-ACC selection at Miami. He broke Carlos Huerta's school record for field goals made. He was undrafted in 2018, but has found a home here in SoCal. I'm joined in studio right now by Michael Badgley. Michael, my man, it is so good to see you. How are you?
All right, I'm great. Thank you for having me. This is great. Big fan of the show. Love it.
All right, it's good to have you. So did you bring me a gift here? What's going on?
Yeah, brought you a little Money Badger t-shirt.
The Money Badger. Oh, yeah. Money Badger is one of my all-time favorite nicknames. For those who don't know, where did that come from?
One day I was just hanging out in the locker room. One of the reporters came up to me and said, hey, these fans are tweeting out, you know, the Money Badger this, Money Badger that. Do you like the nickname? And I go, well, I'm not going to make up my own nickname. So yeah, sure. Let's run with it.
Hey, you know better than to self-gloss. Money Badger is great. What do you like better, Money Badger or Money Bags?
Oh, in the locker room, Melvin Gordon kind of started throwing the name Money Bags out there. So I think he likes it. Both are great nicknames. I love it. So
they're both great. If you ask me, I'm going to go with the Money Badger. Listen, it's kind of funny and something to laugh at, but the fact that you've got guys like vets, quality guys in that locker room, and they're hitting you with handles like Money Badger and Money Bags for a team that has been searching for a kicker, what does that respect mean to you? How does that feel?
It's incredible. You know, you walk into the room, you're kind of like a ghost. Everyone's looking at you kind of like, oh, you know, just another kicker in the room. You're walking by Phillip Rivers, Antonio Gates, guys like that, and you're not sure what, you know, what's really going on when you're walking through that locker room. But to have their respect and to, you know, be able to talk to them on the plane rides or on the sideline, it's incredible.
Well, initially, was that the vibe? I mean, not anymore, never again. But was the vibe initially great? Here comes another kicker. I wonder how long this guy's going to last.
I mean, maybe for them. You know, I got my own goals, so I kind of was like, nah, I'm going to take this role and run with it. But, yeah, I think with this organization, there was probably some of that going through the locker room and they just wanted a guy they could trust.
Michael Badgley joining me in studio. So I had West Virginia wide receiver David Sills in the studio earlier this show. We were talking about the prep for the combine and the NFL draft. Take me back to this time last year. You're coming off a record-breaking career at Miami. What kind of thoughts were you having about the NFL? And then how were you preparing for life after college?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of expectations going through that whole process because the season ends and you're going through everything. You got the Senior Bowl coming up. And then after that, you got the combine prep. And then after that, you got pro day. So everything's just building up to different stressful situations, and you're not sure how you're going to react. Especially being a kicker, you know, what kind of training are you going to do? What are you going to do?
What's that like? I was going to say, prepping as a kicker is a little bit different than any other position. So how'd you go about prepping? Like, what's a kicker do to get ready for all these things?
I just tried to stay an athlete, you know, because my whole life, that's just what I've based myself on, playing three sports and, you know, doing that kind of workout stuff and just, you know, trying to have the beach body and look good.
See, but people have to understand this. I don't know if they appreciate where you're coming from on this, but I want to follow you up really quickly right there. You know, this whole notion that kickers are not that athletic. Fact is, set the record straight. Is it true that you played ball at Summit High School in New Jersey, that you were a quarterback, a running back, a receiver, a free safety, a kicker, a kick returner, and a punt returner?
Yeah, I didn't like leaving the field. I didn't leave. I'd score a touchdown, kick the extra point, do the kickoff, go back, play safety on defense, and then same thing. If they had to go punt returner, I was kick returner too. It was fun.
All right, so this is a story that your senior year of high school, the starting quarterback goes down, so you played some quarterback. 7 of your completions went for TDs. Is that true? And what were you like spinning it out there?
You know, at first, when I would go in at quarterback, I was just a guy who kind of knew the whole offense, so they wanted a guy who was running the show back there like that. And they didn't think I could really throw until I went up to coach, and I go, you got to give me a chance here. These guys aren't going to be able to cover our guys. So we ran like this play action play, and I just threw it deep to my buddy downfield and just set it off. Yeah, I can throw. So they
what'd the coach say?
He was like, all right, we're going to start throwing the ball a little bit. But my first pass was a pop pass across the middle against Cranford, threw an interception. So that kind of didn't start off on the right foot. But
not when you're telling him you can do it.
As soon as we went deep, it was cool.
All right, so the legend of the Money Badger is even bigger than that. True or false? Did you win state titles in football, hockey, and lacrosse? And was the plan for you to play lacrosse in college?
Yeah. You know, in my town, lacrosse is, that was what everybody did. You know, everyone would go play Division I lacrosse. So I'm thinking, all right, I guess that's what I got to do. My brother did it. He went to Providence College. He was a goalie. So all through high school, I was like, all right, I'm going to go play lacrosse. But then one day my high school coach came up to me and said, hey, you know, you're pretty good at this kicking thing. You should take a look into doing it. You're getting some looks. So I started getting some looks, and, you know, I love football. So that was a no-brainer for me to do that.
All right, dude, so you're like a freaky athlete. You're the Money Badger. You go to Miami, and you have this great career. You're getting ready for the combines and everything that comes along with it. What kind of interest were you getting from NFL teams at that point?
You know, you hear different things. Your agent's telling you some things. You're not sure what's going on, what teams need. You're breaking down other teams and what they need, if they need a kicker, what their other seasons were like, if they're going to re-sign the guy. But you know, when push comes to shove at the end of it, you know, you're expecting to get drafted, and then that day comes and you don't, then you just try to, you're like, okay, let's go free agency and see what teams are calling. Not a lot of teams were calling. And luckily the Indianapolis Colts gave me a chance, and I said, all right, let's go hang out with Adam Vinatieri. See what that brings.
That's something totally different too. Okay. But when you were undrafted, I mean, what was that? Did that feel, and you're a confident guy, but did that feel like a slap in the face? Did it feel like you were disrespected? Did it hurt your confidence? Like, what did you do with that?
You know, like I said, everyone's got their goals and expectations. So, yeah, I wanted to get drafted, and I thought I would be. But at the end of the day, you know, being the undrafted guy, I kind of felt like I got more of a chip on my shoulder. So I was excited, and I knew that any opportunity I was going to get, I was going to embrace it.
All right, so you go to the Colts, right? So you go to compete with the greatest guy to ever do it. What was that like? Was that, okay, you have goals. You're a competitive guy. Were you thinking, I respect this guy. I love this guy. I'm coming for his job. I'm going to beat this guy out.
Well, I think at the end of the day, you know what's going to happen, especially in an organization like that with a guy who's got so much respect throughout the NFL. But, you know, my mentality didn't change. I was going in there to try to beat the guy. But you know, I also took that opportunity to learn as much as I could from a guy like that. You know, the mental side of the game, how to walk around a locker room, just how to be a pro. So it was little things like that that I knew I wanted to take away from that whole experience.
I can say, look, I've spent a lot of time with a lot of guys, and when Vinatieri walks up, he's got a presence to him now. Like, oh, you yeah. know, like there's this guy's got a lot of respect from a lot of different people, and I don't care what the position is. What was your biggest takeaway from the time you spent with him and the chat you had with him?
Just a lot of the talks we had, he's got a lot of great stories. His mental edge is totally different, you know, and the thing a lot of people ask is, oh, did you learn anything from, you know, the way he kicks? And I go, you know, every kicker's got their own style, their own swagger to him. So learning different ways to kick the ball from him wasn't a thing, but I learned how to be a pro, you know, how to be around the guys in the locker room and just, you know, be part of the team. Cause a lot of times you see specialists, they're just kind of on their own. They're just off to the side and just like, okay,
that guy's just that? I mean, do you want to be one of the fellas and say, hey, look, man, I'm part of this team. I'm with you guys. Or do you stay off to the side and do your own thing?
No question. You know, I'm a football player. That's the way I look at it. So, you know, whether it's talking to the guys on the plane rides home or being in the locker room and, you know, chopping it up about sports and everything, just, you know, be a football player.
So when you talk about kicker swag, like, what's your kicker swag? What does kicker swag look like?
Basically just having a team that has confidence in you when you walk out there, being able to tell the coach, hey, I can make this. You know, when he asks you, he's got no question in his brain that he's going to let you go out there and kick a 53-yard field goal in a playoff game. So it's certain things like that, just being able to walk on the field and have confidence that...
God, dude, what's that like? Everybody wants to know what that's like. What's it like to line up and look at a 53-yarder in a postseason game to win a football game? I mean, are you the only guy on the planet? What's it feel like?
It's one of those experiences where you've worked on it in practice. So it's kind of natural to, you know, kickers and, you know, guys like me when you walk out there. But to the outsider's edge, I guess it's like, wow, you know, that's pretty far. But, you know, 53 in a playoff game, you got to get the points you can. So being able to go out there and to be able to make a kick like that was awesome.
So not making a kick like that probably feels like the worst thing in the world, even though that's part of the job. Does making it feel like the greatest thing in the world, or is it just relief?
More so just I got my job done. Especially
your
that
job.
Play. As a kicker, you only get so many plays. You know, D linemen can miss a tackle, they get the next play to go out there and do it. As a kicker, you might not get another kick. So it's one of those things where, all right, I got only so many opportunities, got to make the most of
it. Dude, you sound like you're wired for it. I mean, how much mental training goes into it? I mean, is that a muscle you constantly work, or are you just kind of wired for it, man? Like, you want that moment. You're not afraid of the moment.
Yeah, you got to embrace stuff like that. You got to want the pressure. You know, certain things, and, you know, you got to know that there's going to be misses. You know, there's going to be times where, you know, you're the guy that, you know, ruins the season, or you don't want it to be, but you're going to be the guy that misses a kick. But to get over those situations is what kind of makes and breaks you. So it's I love the pressure of it.
Not in the back of your mind, like Scott Norwood, like, this guy missed a 47-yarder in the Super Bowl. Dude, that's no chip shot, man. It's a 47-yard kick. And then that just kind of sticks to that guy.
Yeah.
Fair or not fair? Is that in the back of your mind that could be me one day?
You know, you don't think about those kind of things.
I wouldn't either, man.
Yeah, no. You don't think about stuff that's happened in the past. You just kind of take the moment, go out there, and, you know, that feeling just, Let me do my job here and let me embrace this. It's awesome.
Michael Badgley joining us, and you have. So you get the opportunity with the Chargers. I know you had a connection with the staff, which I'll get to if I have time, but what was a kicking tryout with that team like?
It was awesome. There was three of us out there. You know, there's only so many opportunities that you get, because I had one with the Raiders two weeks before, something like that, and I guess it didn't go my way, and then I get that call with the Chargers, and I was like, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to do my thing. So I knew that opportunity, I had to embrace it. So it's one of those, you know, your adrenaline's pumping, but as soon as you let that first kick fly, you're like, all right, let's let it roll here.
Can you slow down the adrenaline? How do you do that? Like, I know for, like, what I do, if there's a big stakes opportunity, man, it just starts pumping. And I've always tried to figure out, how do you slow that down? Can you?
I think you develop a confidence when you kind of start running out into the field and you realize it's not a nervous situation anymore. You know, I go back to college, I think my sophomore year was my first game winner attempt against Nebraska. It was only a 28-yarder. But I remember I was shaking. I was like, oh, this is it. Like, this is a chance to be the hero. And I was shaking, and luckily I made it. But ever since that point, I was able to run on the field just to, you know, just be cool, calm, and relaxed, and just have fun with it.
And then your first game against the Browns, you make all your kicks. What was that game like?
Oh, that was awesome. I mean, that environment alone, being away for your first game and a packed stadium like that, it was intense. And I just knew all right, get that first extra point through, and then, all right, let's roll.
Michael Badgley joining me for another few moments. And then against the Steelers, you're lining up to kick the game winner in Pittsburgh. All right, hostile environment. The kick was missed. Joe Hayden jumped off sides. You get another look. They jump off sides again, and then you nail the third one to win that game. What do you remember about that sequence?
It was incredible. I've always told myself, you know, just make the first one. Then nobody's saying anything. Nobody cares. Just bury that first one. But then they come, they jump off sides, they block it. I'm like, all right, we got another shot here. And then you get closer, and then I'm like, all right, I'm going to make this one. Third time's a charm. Buried it. Let's go home. Let's get out of there. Especially in a game like that. We came back. Sunday Night Football, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth. It was special.
Man, dude, what's that flight home like after a game like that and a win like that?
You know, like I said, those plane rides home, and I was lucky enough, besides the flight home from New England, every single flight home was, you know, a happy ending. You know, we were fired up. It was never a loss on one of those flights home, so it was always a great time. Everybody's in a good mood. Phillip Rivers is telling us stories. It was awesome.
That's what it's all about, right? And then the flip side of that, unfortunately, what's the plane flight home like after New England? No one's telling any stories.
Yeah, you know, especially a flight like that, the season's over. So you kind of, everyone's alone. They're sitting down, they're remorseful, they're watching film, what they could have done better. But once those long flights get going, then everyone kind of starts chattering up a little bit, and you talk about the seasons, the good times.
That's the beer, bro, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the liquid. So finally, you have that monster game against the Ravens in the playoffs. You're coming into a season now where you went from being undrafted and waived in Indianapolis to setting franchise records for the Chargers. They're making shirts. You're the money badger. How does it all feel now?
It's cool. You know, to kind of take off like this, it's awesome. And it's cool to run with a brand like this and, you know, have so many people supporting me, all the fans and, you know, this whole city of L.A., but, you know, I've always said just one kick at a time. Just keep going like that. Keep the same motive that's gotten me here. And just, one day at a time, one kick at a time.
Is that personal consumption right there, or is there an online store? Can people get those things?
Oh, yeah. You go to MikeMoneyBadger.com. Also, link in my bio on Michael Badgley on Instagram.
Dude, smart. Very smart. It's one of my all-time favorite nicknames, the Money Badger. Listen, I appreciate you coming in here, finding your way into the jungle. It's about time you did this. I know you know the show. I'm glad you found your way to the studio. Let's be sure and we do this during the season, too.
Oh, beautiful. I'd love to.
All right. Good seeing you. Michael Badgley joining me in studio. And again, you know where to get the shirt. That's pretty tight. The Money Badger. All right, there is an update on Robert Kraft, which I will have for you on the other side of this. Ran a little heavy. First up, here is a sports update for you. My thanks to Michael Badgley, Chargers kicker in studio. Got the latest on Robert Kraft, and it is not good for him. In the meantime, you want to think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. ATP coming up momentarily. Here's the latest on Bob Kraft. Michelle Steele from ESPN tweets, Palm Beach State Attorney Dave Ehrenberg, they have released all probable cause affidavits, including Kraft's. Kraft was seen on January 19th and 20th inside Orchids of Asia soliciting prostitution per prosecutors. Quote, this is not about lonely old men, Ehrenberg says, but forced labor and forced sexual conduct. Here is an excerpt from the paperwork released today. Quote, on Sunday, January 20th, 2019, video surveillance was conducted at the Target business at approximately 10:59 hours. Kraft entered the business through the front door where he paid cash at the front desk to an Asian female. End quote. There is more to this report, and I'll get into it tomorrow, but let me jump in right here. January 20th was the AFC Championship game. New England at Kansas City for a chance to go to the Super Bowl, and Bob was going to the Orchids of Asia. The day of the championship game. The day of the conference title game. And he's doing this. How's that work? I mean, did he go right from there to the airport to fly to KC? How did that work? Are you ready to go to the plane, Mr. Kraft? Not just yet. I've got something I have to do first. I mean, somebody can track that flight. That's not hard to do. And apparently he was there the day before. So the championship game, he's there, and the day before. Per PFT, a police officer stopped Kraft's car as he left on January 19th. And the officer asking Kraft, who was a passenger, for identification. Kraft produced a Massachusetts driver's license, and he still went back the next day. Stopped by cops and went back the next day. They made it seem like it was a random stop, but they wanted to make sure they identified him for the record. I don't know. A lot of people get nervous just driving past a police officer, even when they're driving below the speed limit, and they've got their hands at 10 and 2. Bob was coming from soliciting a prostitute, allegedly. Gets pulled over, allegedly. Provides his license, allegedly. And then goes right back to the same spot the next day. Allegedly, the day of the conference championship game? I mean, either my man has got a knot in his back he really wants out and is under a lot of stress, what with it being the championship game, well, there's something else going on here. And again, Dave Ehrenberg, Palm Beach State Attorney, quote, "This is not about lonely old men, but forced labor and forced sexual conduct." So that's the latest there. And there is surveillance, video surveillance conducted there, and it has him entering the business through the front door where he paid cash at the front desk to an Asian female. All right. Now, I'm not a legal expert, but having video surveillance of him walking through the door and paying money does not necessarily mean that he paid for a sexual act. But if there are employees there being held against their will, and Michelle Steele from ESPN tweets, he was seen on the 19th and 20th inside Orchids of Asia soliciting prostitution per prosecutors. This is getting worse, not better. Remember, right when that story dropped, he had a spokesperson who categorically denied that he did anything illegal. Right now, what does that mean? Categorically denied that he did anything illegal. Does that mean that he's going to try and argue that it was consensual? And now we're out of time. Miss the ATP. The Ask the Pros brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so when the story broke, it broke right before the start of the program last week. Now this part of the story, the update breaks right at the end of the program. We will pick this up tomorrow. My thanks to Michael Badgley, Bucky Brooks, and David Sills, XR4TI as well. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow. We're out.